Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're talking about the Billy Meier case, of course, and I'm going to start out today reading from The Way to Live. This is important. I remember reading this for the first time and how it struck me. It says here, as a beginning to meditation, a meditative principle can be used. I bring my consciousness home. I let go of everything. I relax myself. With these three points, the fundamentals in every meditation are addressed. Because with each individual phase of this three-part meditative sentence, different important levels of meanings are addressed. Bringing the consciousness home means that through the meditatively practiced attentiveness, it is put into a state of equalizedness and calm abiding. To put one's consciousness itself into one's own innermost realm and to let it rest in its nature in a purely assimilating and observing form without letting it be influenced, that is to say, disturbed by intrusive thoughts. I let go of everything means to release one's consciousness from the prison of the steered or uncontrolled thoughts, which have the effect for the consciousness's calm abiding. Let me talk a little bit about the prison of the uncontrolled thoughts. Because the thoughts give birth to the circumstances of your life. In other words, the circumstances of your life grow out of the thoughts. Now, we're not programmed to think that way, but it's actually the truth. Your creational power arises from your consciousness and from the might of your thoughts, and the circumstances of your life grow out of the power of your thoughts. So when you learn to master your thoughts, then the next step is you learn to master the circumstances of your life. So when you have good thoughts, neutral positive thoughts, equalized and balanced thoughts, then you'll have good feelings. And those are feelings which grow out of the thoughts. Gefühl in the German means feelings that grow out of the thoughts. And then from those feelings, you'll generate habits, good habits, which will lead to good circumstances in your life. It goes on to say here that I relax myself. It ultimately means to dissolve the tenseness of the consciousness, which is in constant uproar because of the thought. And to completely relax in the consciousness itself, it means to go into the true nature of the consciousness, into the state of the absolute stillness based on the stillness itself. In this state, the total relaxation dissolves the prison of the thoughts, whereby the impression and cognition, as well as inspirations and intuitions and so forth, find free access to the consciousness. So the big struggle here on the earth is learning to control our thoughts and to control our thinking. And there's an interesting article written by Marianne Ullinger Mondrian, and it talks about this one sentence that's part of Billy's book with the 77 meditative sentences. It says, "I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself." And she goes on to explain and break down this statement. But I think that's one statement you could meditate on. I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. So one of the things, of course, that we want to do is learn to control our thoughts and to gain might over ourselves. And the problem with people of the earth is that we're ill in our consciousness. And really, the book, The Might of Thoughts, is designed to address a society that's ill in its consciousness. A society that's ill in its consciousness tends to destroy itself. And that's one of the things that we're seeing in the historical trends right now. And I wanted to read a little bit more of this article that talks about the mass immigrations that are going on. And this was written to all the governments of Europe by Billy in 1958. And he said, "And the time is already coming when the peoples will begin to mix, and when many human beings will flee their homeland countries to find shelter somewhere else in foreign countries. And there will be many refugees who have to struggle to maintain their lives. Many others creep into the structures of the better positioned countries as economic refugees." Now, this was a really, really opened my eyes a lot here. Because today we're programmed to think in terms of accepting multiculturalism, and we're programmed to think in terms of accepting the mixing of the races. Boy, was I totally awakened by this. Let me read a little bit of contact number 270, written in 1999. "Billy, my next question concerns the mixing of peoples. You and Quetzal, as well as Semyase, all of you had previously explained to me that the mixing of peoples in great amounts, as they, for example, come about through wars, asylum seekers, and whole migrations or partial migrations of people, as well as great immigrations and so forth, portends an extremely great danger for the existence of humankind, namely due to the widely varied mixing of bloods and genetic influences, etc., as a result of which the human being would become soft and unable to cope with life, as well as becoming susceptible to disease. As a result, as you've explained, over time would emerge such degenerative changes in human beings that some and different peoples or tribes and so forth would become extinct." So what this is saying here is that different races of people over time have built up certain genetic structures in order to adjust to the environment they live in. Like, some people have white skin, some people have dark skin, usually in a warmer environment. And that the mixing of peoples undermines the genetics that have been developed over time, the evolution that have developed over time to adjust to a specific area. And when you have the mixing of peoples, it actually weakens the whole genetics of the human being to the point where it can literally make us become extinct. Let me go on here. Contact 296, March 10th, 2001. "Billy, thank you. How do you actually treat it among your peoples? Do they also mix to the extent as this the case here on Earth?" Billy's asking, Kata, do the Plearen mix the way Earth people mix? And Patel says, no. We have previously given you information about that. No. With us, all peoples abide by the rule that they remain amongst themselves and do not mix with other peoples. Now, that's a big shocker. The races remain among themselves with their group, with the people who had developed the same genetics over time to adjust to the environment that they're living in. But we're doing just the opposite today. We're mixing all these different peoples. We shouldn't be doing that. It's destroying our genetics. Again, know with us all peoples abide by the rule that they remain amongst themselves and do not mix with other peoples. Consequently, with us, there is no overpopulation of foreigners, which could take place through the mixing of peoples. Even if with us all peoples and races work together, everything is still preserved which belongs to the individual peoples and races. Mixing between members of different peoples and races only occurs extremely rarely. So there's this big push by the mainstream media now to accept these immigrants. This is absolutely a dangerous thing to do. This will undermine the whole genetics of the people of Earth. Let's continue here. With us, it is unfortunately so that the mixing of peoples and races are promoted by false humanists. However, in doing so, the exploitation of the citizens is also fostered because the population of foreigners costs a lot of tax dollars as well as donated funds. And Billy goes on to talk about, if you even speak about this in Switzerland, not only will you be labeled as a racist, but they have anti-racist laws now in Switzerland, and you can end up in jail. Okay, I'll continue here. The anti-racism laws, which has the consequence that in relation to the foreign population, you may no longer speak the truth, as the same is also the case with swindlers, liars, cheaters, and criminals, etc., which in Switzerland, one is no longer allowed to call people that which they really are. With that, it is made impossible that you can warn the honest fellow citizens about such elements. Even neo-Nazis and other extreme criminals, anarchists, terrorists, riffraffs take advantage of this as a result. So I'll jump to the conclusion here. And this is, there's an article, if you want to read this, and I know this is not going to be politically correct, it's called The Mass Migrations of Peoples. And shoot, I don't have the URL with me, but I'll finish the conclusion here for you. The mass migrations and mixing of peoples caused by the overpopulation insanity are no harmless terribleness and certainly not any desirable culmination point in the sense of multicultural societies. Even if denied or concealed by the politicians and the scientists for the reasons of unknowingness, for economic, that is to say, for reasons of the profit, or out of fear of erroneous assessments and accusations of racism. Here emerges an enormous and unnatural foreign infiltration of peoples who for thousands of years are so culturally, linguistically, and climatically, mentally and biologically greatly adapted to their original dwelling places and their homelands that strong differences will collide with each other and lead to explosive tensions between the human beings. And that's what we're getting now. These explosive tensions between cultures that are completely different. Since the foreigners will integrate themselves only to a limited extent or even not at all into a completely new society for them with strange thinking, feeling and behavior patterns. Through foreign infiltration on too great a scale, strong aggressions due to envy, resentment, and thus conflict, acts of gewalt, and from it further resulting subsequent problems are inevitably brought about, which no longer can be controlled in its number and its and violence. So it's a big shocker here. article about the mass migrations of people, and this was predicted in the Meyer information a while back, that this would occur. Now, as I often do, I'm going to go back to a little bit we touched on yesterday in the spiritual teachings. And I was talking about creation and what the universal consciousness is. And there is a universal consciousness in our universe. Our universe, my information refers to as the DERN universe, the DERN universe. And this universal consciousness, they say, is not a person or a personification as God is depicted by the religions. But the universal consciousness is an impersonal spiritual energy or power. It's described kind of like this. It's the most immense spiritual energy in the universe. Its wisdom is immeasurable. It is called a Wesenheiten in the German. Now, a Wesenheiten is different than a Wesen or a Weisen. We as people have personalities. Even our cats and dogs have personalities. Now, the universal consciousness is different. As it evolves along a set pattern. It goes through a series of set steps. But we as human beings, when we evolve our consciousness, our free will is involved. But the universal consciousness doesn't operate that. It operates that way. In terms of its evolution, it functions in an automatic kind of way. Now, the universal consciousness radiates love. Much like a star, like our sun, radiates light. And all of the animals and the people and the flora and the fauna depend on the light of the sun and the warmth to stay alive. But the star of our sun does not personally have any attachment to us. Now, the universal consciousness is a little bit like that, but it radiates love. Now, this is different because it radiates love without having necessarily a personal attachment to us. So, as it says in the Meyer material, the incredible splendor is the visible expression of the love of creation. So the tremendous beauty of nature, you're seeing the manifestation of the love of creation. And creation radiates love. And if you have a fine sensitive ability called M-Finding, you can sense the radiating love of creation. And love is the highest creational natural law. Everything follows that law of love. Except humans. Humans can use their own free will. And it's interesting that the creation doesn't give commandments. Now you say, what about the Ten Commandments? Meyer material talks about 12 commandments, in fact. But these commandments actually come from certain spiritual levels, certain spiritual planes. Like the Patali level that transmits what are called the Decalogue or the 12, what you might call the 12 commandments. So there are these creational natural laws that the universe functions by. Gravity would be one of them. The law of cause and effect, the law of reincarnation, something we've talked about before. And maybe it's worth talking about a little bit again, because we all have a spirit form, and the spirit is part of our spiritual consciousness. And we also have a material consciousness. Now, your spiritual consciousness is most likely about 4 to 5 million years old, and it has had many, many lifetimes, and it has manifested in the physical in many different circumstances over hundreds of thousands of years here on the earth. What happens is when a child is born, 21 days after that birth, 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg, so the baby is still inside the mother's womb, creation sends down a spirit form. The spirit form enters into the superior colliculus, which is the midbrain of the child, the area that controls sight. And the energy of the spirit form goes throughout the whole body, and the fetus is alive at that point, and the heart starts to beat. And what comes in with the spirit is something called the consciousness block. And in the consciousness block is the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, the unconscious mind. And in the subconscious are the memories of the predecessor personalities, which we generally don't have access to, particularly at this point in our evolution. Later, much, much later, it becomes much easier to get the information related to the predecessor personalities. But right now, most spirit forms on the earth are about 4 to 5 million years old. There are spirit forms 8 to 12 million years old that came here in spacecraft in other civilizations. And as I've said before, there was a civilization that came to the earth 130,000 years ago. That was the civilization of Atlantis and Lemuria. Before that, civilization that was headed by a man named Pelagon. That was 150,000 years ago. And then before that, about a million or so years ago, there was a civilization in the southwestern United States which nuked itself. And that's where we got our Death Valley and Fire Valley, I think it's called. So we here on the earth, we are a mixture of people from different areas. There was also on earth a naturally developing earth human about 9 to 12 million years ago. That first became a Homo sapien. So as these cultures, like Atlantis and Lemuria, rose and destroyed themselves, in the background were native Earth humans who were very primitive. So we've had this weird mixing on the Earth. And the laws of reincarnation are such that if you come to the Earth from another world and you die on the Earth, then you enter into the reincarnational patterns of Earth. So when you pass away, when you die, the spirit form comes out of the body and it goes into the spiritual realm. And what happens is when the spirit comes out, it takes the consciousness with it, the consciousness block, the Meyer material calls that. And there's an area in the spiritual realm where the consciousness block, all the memories are processed. So if you have a typical time after death, would be about a lifetime and a half, where these previous life memories are processed and we pull the evolutive values out of all your experiences, and that those memories are stored in the new mentality that's created. And the spirit form is strengthened by these evolutive energies that are produced by the virtues that you generated in your previous lifetime. And then the process occurs all over again. So if you spend 100 years in your physical lifetime, your spirit form is supposed to spend about 150 years processing the information from your previous life and preparing you for the next material life. This is a process which goes on for millions and millions of years. In the book, The Psyche, it gives the number of 42 million years where we incarnate into a physical body. Now, your material consciousness will be different every lifetime, but your spiritual consciousness is what stays the same. And that is a quick overview of one of the laws of creation, which is the law of reincarnation. One of the other laws of creation is the law of striving, the fundamental law of all evolution. Without striving, there is no life. So the plants strive to grow and they evolve. And even there's evolution in the animal world. The animals evolve their intellect, actually. We as human beings have a higher kind of evolution. It's called the evolution of our consciousness. So our consciousness is being evolved over many, many lifetimes. Now, in this physical lifetime, the law of striving applies to you not only in evolving your consciousness, but in your work. Work at home, work at your workplace. You should continue to strive, and it's a really interesting principle that your happiness is directly related to how focused you are on your striving. And as you strive and as you work, the goal here is to have a neutral, positive thought processes, because out of the might of your thoughts come the circumstances of your life. And you can have great circumstances. It depends on maintaining that neutral, positive balance. And that's a harmonious. And there's like three things you should ask yourself every day. Have I harmonized my personality? Have I evolved my consciousness? Have I helped my fellow man? And I like to throw in helping the plants and the animals as well. Because one of the fundamental laws of love, which we were talking about earlier, love, which is a creational natural law, is the law to live and help live. And law, the existence of love, it is the highest form. It's a universal love that we're talking about, a wisdom-conditioned love. It is not false love. The false love is very unstable and very romantic. And that's the kind of love our society emphasizes today, and that's why we have a 70% divorce rate, among all the other problems we have. You know, Sfoth told Billy, Sfoth was Billy's first extraterrestrial contact, that the biggest problem with the Earth humans is they no longer understand the creation. And one of the mysteries of creation is that creation is all connected in ways that we don't understand yet. And I imagine we have to find that out for ourselves. Now, one of the things the Meyer information talks about is a collective subconscious, that all the people on the earth have a collective subconscious. So how that manifests sometimes is when there is a discovery on one side of the earth, 2 or 3 days later or a week later, someone else will make a similar discovery. It's because we're all connected in ways we don't understand yet. This is probably part of the attributes of the universal consciousness. So what this universal consciousness does is it creates spirit forms, many different kinds of spirit forms. The plants have spirit forms, the animals have spirit forms, human beings have spirit forms. The spirit form of the human being is designed to help the creation with its own evolution. So that's part of our purpose as well. But this striving is the fundamental law of all evolution. Striving is an impulse that comes from your inner self. And this inner impulse will be a driving force for you to continue to improve your circumstances, to continue to evolve your consciousness. It can be manifesting in this very simple day-to-day tasks like cleaning out your garage. That is part of the impulse of striving to continually organize, to continually improve. This is one of the laws of creation. And when you function by that law, your life will go better. You will have an increased happiness. Okay, I wanted to talk about striving. I wanted to talk about the law of love. Let me step back a little bit and then go back in time. This always helps me to put things in perspective. Young Edward Albert Meyer, he was growing up in Bulak, Switzerland, and he started to get these telepathic messages to go out into the forest from this very elderly man named Svath, who turned out to be Billy's first mentor. And Billy saw Svath's spacecraft come out of the air, the pear-shaped craft. It landed. Svath stepped out, and he's a Plejaran man. Now, the Plejaran are human beings very much like us, similar size, similar appearance. They don't live in the Pleiades. They live some 80 light years beyond the Pleiades in a different space-time configuration. Now, you might wonder why that wasn't talked about in the beginning. Well, can you imagine the complexity of trying to describe the hundreds of billions of stars, the hundreds of billions of galaxies multiplied by all the different space-time configurations? That was one of the reasons. There was also a time coming when the Plejaran knew that there would be copycats. Let's just call them copycats. We're talking about their contacts with the Pleiadians. And about that time in 1995, when the Plejaran left the Earth, they revealed their true identity as the Plejaran. The Plejaran are a very highly advanced people from a star system that was populated, my understanding is, about 200,000 years ago. A man brought a whole group of people with him. His name was Asael. He was one of these Ishwish's kings of wisdom from the past. He led a whole group of people to another world, another star system. They came from Lyra Vega, and at that time the Lyrians were warring among themselves. They had that issue as well. So these people, who eventually called themselves the Plejaran, found a world that was basically habitable, and they did their own terraforming on that world. That world is called Era. Since that time, the Plejarans have advanced much farther in their civilization and much farther in their spiritual lives. They've had 50,000 years with no war. And they had bases here on the Earth for quite some time. The bases in Switzerland were here for 300 years. They had bases in North America. They had bases in Asia. About 2,860 of these extraterrestrial humans were here on the Earth. Human beings, just like you and me. The galaxy is populated with human beings. Some of these human beings reside in different space-time configurations. Some of them reside in our space-time configuration. In 1995, they left the Earth. They wouldn't tell us why. And before that time, there were series of bases in various locations on the Earth. One of the people that I was talking about yesterday was the people within Mount Shasta. I think they've left too. I don't know that they're there anymore. Mount Shasta and Mount Mammoth is two mountains in Northern California. There were 700 people located in Mount Shasta called the Hyperboreans. And they are a leftover descendants of a group of extraterrestrials that lived on the Earth in the ancient past. They were called the Hyperboreans. These Hyperboreans, for a while, resided in the north, in the northern regions. And they call Hyperborea the area near the North Pole. Well, at that time, the conditions were very different on the Earth. And there was a continual time of summer. It was very beautiful. there. That area was attacked and conquered about 113,000 years ago by a man named Eris the Barbarian, who returned to the Earth from Beta Centauri. He was also the guy that got started the Great War between Atlantis and Lemuria. He was also a king of wisdom, but he was not a king of wisdom of the spiritual teachings. Instead, he was a king of wisdom of technical fields and warfare and other things. So just because you're an Ishwish doesn't mean that you've necessarily assimilated the spiritual teachings yet. Eris is described in Contact Report 9, Contact Report 70. In Contact Report 70, he's said to be an extremely bestial and barbarous person whose power was feared, and he commanded 200 high-grade scientists, which he called sub-leaders. These people, they fell upon the Earth, they robbed, they murdered, they conquered Hyperborea. Eris, Barbarian's the son, conquered the area of India in Pakistan. Now, the reason, one of the reasons that Hyperborea was actually such an unusual place is the Earth had not shifted on its axis yet. And when it did, and I think the shift was caused by the Atlanteans or the Lemurians when they slammed that giant asteroid into the Earth. So it's very interesting, the history that the Meyer material talks about. And you start to see how it's all linked together. There were three earthly peoples described in Contact Report 9. They were known as the Indians. And then there was a fair-skinned group of people that settled around the Black Sea. And the third group were the Gypsies along the south of the Mediterranean Sea, who were in this case called the Hebrews. So anyway, I was talking about Svath, and then I got off on the tangent of other peoples that have been on the earth. And one of the groups I talked about yesterday was the Hastars, who are located in the North Sea. Well, we're located there in a base on the bottom of the North Sea. The Plarion built that base for them. They were about 1,100 years ahead of the people of the Earth, and they were here to study the people of the Earth. They were close enough to our development that they could tolerate being around us. You see, our thoughts, when I talk about the might of our thoughts, can also produce very negative impulses. And that's one of the things we need to do here on the earth in order to kind of grow up and hopefully not destroy ourselves like all the societies on earth have done, is to start to learn to control the negative impulses that comes out from our consciousness. And that's the big challenge. It starts with you. It starts with me. It starts with every moment we need to be striving to make sure our thought processes are harmonious, that they're neutral positive, not too positive. Too positive is also unbalanced. You see, the universal consciousness, the universe, tries to always balance things. Have you noticed that in nature? Water always finds its level point. If you look at nature, the balance should be there between the populations of all the different species. But our population is getting out of balance. That's why there's this giant explosion of the human population, which causes all the other populations to suffer. And it literally, our Earth is in danger of destruction from this out of balanceness. Part of these creational natural laws are learning to balance everything. And that's what some of these extraterrestrials in the past, the ones that were benevolent, They weren't all benevolent. But the ones that were benevolent did try to teach the people of the earth. And one of these kings of wisdom taught the person that we today call Noah, taught him to build this ark, first of all, to try to save a certain group of people and a certain group of animals. Noah's actual name, according to my information, was Noah Cognesser. And he was about 10 feet tall. And he was commissioned to build the ark by one of these JHWH, one of these kings of wisdom, who actually departed, gave much of this wisdom to this man called Henoch, which is one of the former personalities of the human spirit that is today incarnated in Billy Meyer. According to Meyer information, the whole story of Noah occurred about 100,000 years ago. And the ark rested not on the peak of Mount Ararat, but about 5,000 meters up or so. If it was on the peak, none of those large four-footed creatures could have made it down. But nonetheless, we're slowly piecing together the different facts of history related and how it really occurred. One of the interesting facts about the Meyer material, when it talks about history, it traces the history of this spirit form that we call Nokudamian today. Nokudamian was the first incarnation of the same spirit form that currently resides in Edward Albert Meyer. The spirit form of Billy is allegedly 9.6 billion years old. The extraterrestrials have kind of studied this spirit form and where it has incarnated. And they refer to the spirit form as the universal prophet. And allegedly, it has lived through all the incarnations, all the seven evolutionary steps that human beings go through, and it merged back with the spiritual planes and was about to merge back with creation. But because there was still need for it to do this, it returned from Ararat Athrasata into the material world and achieved certain evolutionary levels of Srut and Bansrut. And it's been a teacher. It's incarnated for the past 10,000 years here on Earth as the people that we know as Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. Well, Nokudamian also incarnated, and I use the term only to identify the spirit form because it's the same spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer today. It also incarnated in other galaxies. Incarnated in another solar system, and incarnated in the Lyra Vega system, and incarnated in other galaxies. Like I said before, it's 9.6 billion years old, older than our Earth. So that kind of puts things in perspective a little bit in terms of the history of the Meyer information. And where it's coming from. We are living today in a time called the third millennium. And I was reading that bit on mass migrations of people and mass immigration. And that's one of the horrible problems that we're going through. The other one is global overpopulation. And these kinds of historical trends have been prophesied and talked about by people like Enoch and Elijah and Jeremiah. Let me read a little bit about the predictions of the prophets Jeremiah and Elijah. It says here, And the peoples of the earth will intermingle, and many terrible things will emerge from it. And much sickness, and much infirmity, hatred, and terror, and revenge, and many deaths will occur. And this is described a little bit here Let me continue. Forecast that, anyway, Elijah, Jeremiah, these old prophets of the Nicodemian line, forecast the negative consequences from the mixing of peoples on the earth, which are now becoming reality and will still become vastly worse in the coming decades and centuries. Fundamentally, the worldwide overpopulation is the cardinal cause for this. Now, this worldwide overpopulation means that there is less living space for people, less food, less healthy air, less drinking water, less jobs, less housing, less recreational areas. And the other thing that it means is the destruction of the natural world. And I'm sure you have some place close to you where trees are being destroyed. Let me explain the forest. The forests moderate the weather. They absorb these super strong, powerful winds that we are experiencing now because of the destruction of the forests, at least in part because of the destruction of the forests. We had 70-mile-an-hour winds here the past 2 days. We are living through these times. We are living through this insanity. The forests, they moderate our weather. And if you can do anything to help the forest, you should do it. Plant trees in your own yard if you can. The forests keep the soil cool, and in the summertime, because when the soil heats up in the summer, it heats up the air, and the hot columns of air collide with the cool columns of air and create great storms. The other thing that the great forests do, besides just provide a wonderful, beautiful areas to look at and to walk in, and in addition to providing wonderful places for animals to live, the forest, as I was saying, they moderate the weather, they cool the ground, they slow the winds. They also absorb tremendous amounts of water. And what we're seeing on the earth today is a tremendous flood, the tremendous floods, on top of other areas without enough water. We are seeing the depletion of our aquifers. You know, the Ogallala Aquifer in the central U.S. is our largest aquifer. It's what supplies the water for agriculture. Because this has been depleted, we're going to have more and more expensive food and even a lack of food in the near future. So this is very, very serious problems that we're facing. Let me bring out yet another warning. I'm glad we did talk about love and some other creational natural laws today, as well as talk about learning how to control our thoughts, because I don't like to dwell too much on all the things that we have to face, and I don't have this particular note with me. I was hoping that I did. Contact 543 talks about the danger of electronic media, and that's another thing which is deteriorating our consciousness, is our electronic media. Try not to read online. Read online as little as possible. It destroys your brain, it deteriorates your brain, it deteriorates your consciousness evolution. Our televisions, our radios, our cell phones, don't play video games, whatever you do, can lead to aggression, lack of initiative. It works contrary, all this electronic media pretty much works contrary to the law of striving, because we should be focused on reading and evolving our consciousness and doing our work, you know, our chores, and evolving through learning these creation natural laws of toil. When you neglect these laws, your difficulties compound in various areas. And our distractions today are not just fun, they're destroying us. And the electronic media, and I'll have to try to talk about that in more detail in maybe our next meeting. Contact 543 talks about that pretty intensely, that our electronic media is destroying us. So we need to follow these laws of creation. One of the laws of creation that I was talking about, or I haven't really covered yet, but I kind of alluded to, is the bipolar structure of everything that exists. There's a positive and negative in everything. And we need to develop the skills to analyze our thoughts at any point in time, positive or negative. And here's one of the gotchas in terms of your thought processes. It's sometimes the lack of evolutive thought, the lack of neutral positive thinking, that strengthens the unhealthy thinking. So instead of rising to the occasion, we're faced with a challenge. Instead of rising to the occasion with neutral positive thoughts, with thoughts that are higher in evolution, sometimes we don't even realize that we fall back on negative thoughts, thoughts that are deceptive, thoughts that are unproductive. It's our lack of evolutive thinking that actually strengthens these negative thoughts. And these negative thoughts are what unconsciously create negative circumstances in your life. And I caught myself today again thinking in terms of negative thoughts. These are where the negative consequences come from. All circumstances in your life grow out of the thoughts. And that's why it's so critical to continually analyze your thinking and to identify defects in your thoughts and eliminate those negative thoughts or thoughts that are ridiculously positive. They're just as dangerous. So we have to achieve this bipolar structure, this balance between the negative and the positive. Now, there is one other effect of our thoughts, which is called the boomerang effect. And it's pretty simple. It's actually confusing if you let it be. Your thoughts that go out, if they're neutral positive when they go out, they always boomerang back as neutral positive. However, if there isn't a perfect balance in your polarity, if you're a little bit too positive in your neutral positive thought, it'll come back to you negative, and it'll force you to see some negative aspect that you weren't seeing before. So it's the way of the universe through the boomerang effect to bring us back to the middle. So that's part of the bipolar structure, the composition of everything that lives, and part of the effects of thoughts, the boomerang of thoughts. So anyway, these are some of the laws of creation. They're kind of hard to absorb at first because they, the laws of creation are so important and they have such practical value, but they're not always obvious, I don't think. They're always 100% obvious to us as we go through things. Let me talk about a little bit about free time. And this is in the book, The Way to Live. And it talks about laziness and free time. And it's interesting, it works right in with what we've been talking about a little bit. Many human beings are carried away by an indifferent inactivity, which is truthfully nothing other than the phlegmatic, dull, and energyless laziness, which takes a Western Northern form in a Southern Eastern form. So we have all kinds of ways of distraction in our culture today. And just log into YouTube and spend a couple hours watching videos. The Southern Eastern laziness generally expresses itself in sitting around all day long in the sun or in the shade, doing nothing and letting every hardworking one be a good human being, as well as avoiding all work or other significant activity. So anyway, when you start to fall into this kind of behavior, you're not following the creational natural law of striving. So let's continue here and see what it says. Sensible activity as much as possible, whereby tea is drunk and insignificant things serve for conversations with friends, relations, and acquaintances. So Billy's talking about what he calls Southern Eastern laziness. And he goes on and says, while the hardworking ones carry out their laborious work and use their free time sensibly in order to learn and to fulfill progress, in contrast to that, the Western Northern laziness is of quite different kind, whereby it nevertheless does have in common with the Southeastern laziness. The all important things in life are disregarded and neglected, whereby they culpably wither. And this, let me tell you, this is a very, very dangerous thing. It's so critical to stay occupied and focused, because things will sneak up on you and you'll have big problems before you realize it. In the human being's Western Northern laziness, it comes about that the important things of life and of evolution are displaced by compulsive activities. Now watch yourself, because electronic media is very compulsive and it will pull you in and you will be compulsively driven to your YouTube on your computer, and you'll be watching YouTube, or you'll be compulsively driven to Facebook, such as, and I'm continuing here with the reading, with senseless enjoyments and so forth, with which the free time and other life are filled to the brim, whereby no time at all remains to concern oneself with the really important things of life. Let me continue. Aside from a good-for-nothing minority of those who eschew work, who practically are to be found around the whole world, and who do not make an effort concerning the important things of life and concerning the evolution, there is also a great majority of human beings to mention who certainly pursue their daily work. However, they disregard all important things of life, such as the learning of the truth and knowledge, in the learning of love, freedom, and humanity, and so forth. So I think that's probably where we are on the earth, is that, you know, there's a lot of people that work every day at their jobs, but they have not taken the time to learn the teaching of the spirit, the teaching of the truth, these creational natural laws, and now our planet is on the brink of disaster. Our societies, again, are on the brink of destroying themselves. That's how important it is to follow the law of striving. Because slowly disaster creeps up on you and you don't realize it. But when the human being truthfully views and considers his or her life, then he or she must recognize that in the place of important things of life, he or she takes up in himself, herself, and pursues a monstrous number of unimportant things. And I really wish I had my highlighter here. So we pursue a monstrous number of unimportant things, which she makes into false responsibilities and gathers in himself and herself, and with which he or she fulfills himself or herself. So we as a society are pursuing a monstrous number of unimportant things while around us the entire globe is falling into catastrophe. So on that pleasant note, and I'm just joking, we better call it an evening. And I appreciate everyone that's coming to shows and the people that listen to the archives. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a good evening.